Hello and welcome to episode 121 of the Building Sustainability Podcast. My name is Jeffrey Hart, and every fortnight join me as I talk to designers, builders, makers, dreamers and doers. Together we can explore the wide world of sustainability in the built environment by talking to wonderful people who are doing excellent things. Today's wonderful person is William Stanix. Will is a friend of the podcast. He was on episode 24 and 25, where we had a back and forth question time about natural building stuff. He helped out on the episode 100 with the All-Star Natural Builders team, telling you how to kickstart your career in natural building. He's also just been mentioned in so many episodes, mostly because he's A, an incredibly lovely chap, and B, doing really, really great things. In this episode, we're going to talk about how Will has been retrofitting a barn next to his house. It's around about 300 years old, and he has done it in the most beautiful and natural way. I won't tell you too much more, because Will is about to tell you all about it. A little bit of news. I mentioned last episode about Clayfest 2024, Inside Earth. That is happening from the 15th to the 19th of July. There are 4 days of hands-on practical workshops, and then there is a one-day conference. And let me just read you the lineup. 4 day workshops, we've got James Henderson, friend of the podcast, and last episode's guest, Caroline Nicolay. We've got Alan Cameron Duff, Becky Gilling. We've got friend of the podcast, Jamie Ingle. We've got friend of the podcast, Jeffrey Hart. And we've got friend of the podcast, Will Stanix. And lovely friend of mine, Jew Sota. So those are the people all teaching workshops. And then the conference day, there is Nikolay Shapazov, friend of the podcast, Janilan Lomas, Jan Glasmeyer, Nikki Donati, friend of the podcast, Becky Little. We've got Tom Morton. We've got James Henderson again, and Maria Lisogorskaya, and more. So let me tell you about these workshops. So James Henderson, who wrote the book Earth Render, we've definitely talked about that before. I'll put a link in the show notes. He's teaching a 4 day course on modern clay plaster insulation systems for professionals and self-builders. That'll be ace. 4 days to get fully into it. There is Alan Cameron Duff from the Roundhouse Company teaching a 4 day workshop on fire and earth. An exploration of the synergy between these elements to provide the fundamental needs of warmth and food. That'd be great. Today's guest, Will Stanix, is teaching a 4 day workshop on earth block build, building with earth and block building, and insulating with light hemp earth. That's going to be fantastic. Last episode's guest, Caroline Nicolay, is teaching natural paints and pigment making. We talked about the processes of that last week. Those will be some excellent day courses to get on. And there are some 2 day workshops, sculpting with mud, an introduction to sculpting in 3D and bas relief from the incredibly talented Becky Gilling. Then we've got friend of the podcast, Jamie Ingle. Jamie is teaching clay plastering for beginners. He is an excellent teacher. That will be a lot of fun. There is a 2 day workshop for earthen floors with me, a practical guide to making your own. And then there's a 3 day workshop with Jew Sota, and that is all about basic tool making and sgraffito in clay. If you don't know sgraffito, it is where you plaster flat in two different colours and then you scratch back between the layers so to reveal different colours. It's a really lovely plastering technique. So Ibuki have done a fantastic job of pulling together loads of different people to teach and a really great range of teaching. They've also done a fantastic job of keeping the prices really affordable with concession prices of £145 for a 2 day course with me, or the full price of £227. They've also got a really great discount of 25% on the conference ticket if anyone books for a 4 day Clayfest workshop or two 2 day Clayfest workshops. So you get the full Clayfest experience. That will have you so excited about clay. I should say that I had no idea that either Caroline nor Will were going to be teaching at this Clayfest. So it's all worked out incredibly well. Yeah, why don't you have a listen to what they're saying and then head on over and get yourself a ticket and hang out with them in person. As always, there will be a link in the show notes for you to get your ticket and find out all about the fantastic courses. Okay, other news. This week, there are no new patrons. If you would like to support the podcast, do that through the Patreon website. In return for your financial support, you get bonus interviews, you get advert-free listening, you get discounts on craft courses at the Nettlecombe Craft School, and you get a shout-out on this podcast in this section. If you would like to do so, and this is an independently produced podcast, then head to patreon.com/buildingsustainability. Okay, I think that's about it from me. I'm eager just to get you into this episode with Will and let you hear all about his fantastic project. I'll be back briefly at the end. Enjoy the episode.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's stunning already. Yeah. I'd just leave it like this, mate.
Everyone's been saying that. But I think I can do a little bit better. Do you know what I mean? I mean, the acoustic is really nice with the hemp blocks. So
yeah. Have you noticed much of a change after you've clay plastered it?
No, I haven't got a massive amount of clay plaster yet. It's just the big ceilings. So not yet. But certainly when we did the house, when it went from hempcrete to plastered, he lost all that lovely hempcrete acoustic.
Yeah, even though clay is soft.
Well, the house isn't clay, that's lime.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, so here I'm doing clay and it's all going to be super textured.
I think I was just going to say that, actually. I think the texture is, because it's all about like what bounces back, isn't
yeah,
it?
Exactly. So, yeah.
Like a disruptive surface scatters the sound waves. This exactly. is my attempt at science.
Yeah, well, it must be, isn't it? Because if you look at the hempcrete, it's soft and it's a really textured surface, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not soft. You can walk on it, but it's a textured surface. So that's what... Yeah, so like the ceiling up there, it's going to be that kind of texture. And in the kitchen there. And that's just by floating it with yeah. like a polyfloat or something, which is...
It's what... When we were doing the design museum, we were trying to sell, like, because we did all the boards, the display boards, and we were trying to sell them on what we called Plasterer's Choice,
yeah.
which was the floated finish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I love it.
Yeah.
It's exactly. easy.
It's easy, and I think it's really, like, it's got a sort of depth of
yeah.
of aesthetic, I
yeah. think. Yeah, you get the colour, you get the deeper colour.
Mm.
Rather, when you trowel it, you get the kind of the milkiness, you, whatever the binder was, comes to the surface and you get that kind of milkiness.
Yeah.
But when you float it, that you get the depth of colour from the sand and all whatever the aggregate is coming through.
Mm, and fibre as well.
Yeah.
Like nice.
Yeah.
What have you got of fibre in that one?
So the kitchen is clay, sand, straw, which is the... 50-50-50.
Oh, the famous.
Yeah. 1-1-1. One clay, one sand, one straw. A la James Henderson's book.
Mm-hmm.
Book? Is it in his book? Or do I, from when he took us on that straw bale course anyway?
Yeah.
Since then, I've loved that mix. And so that's just Leighton. That is just the Leighton buzzard sand.
Yeah.
The Leighton buzzard plastering sand, which you get around here with, it's like a whitey grey clay and straw. And it's that, and it's gone that kind of lovely, it's not really, it's like a, I don't know what you describe it as, like a beigey ochre colour.
Yeah. It's almost a little bit pink.
Do you reckon?
I mean, I am colourblind.
It's definitely not pink.
No?
How do you do floors if you colour? Oh, I want white.
Well, no, they can have brown. They can only have brown. So they do floors. All right, so it's a bit ochre-y.
Yeah.
There's ochre in pink. Is there?
It might be getting a reflection off the seat, off the
big maybe thing, that's right? What I'm getting confused by.
So this one, the bright red one, is... So when I took the tiles off the roof, the clay tiles off the roof, all the broken ones I crushed up in a roller pan.
Nice.
And that's the sand, or the aggregate. And it's the same one straw, one clay, one sand, and that's the H.G. Matthews yellow clay.
Nice.
So it's gone like that. Well, it's actually orangey when there's daylight on it.
Yeah.
And then the one in that room up there is the same crushed tiles, but with a whitish grey clay.
Yeah.
And so that's gone like a plum, light plum colour.
That's a gorgeous colour, that one.
The other bedroom I'm going to do with red clay, so it'll be bright red. So you get red, orange, pinky plum.
Ooh.
Yeah. But I just love the fact that those tiles were on the roof for like 300 years. And now they're on the underside of the roof as the plaster.
They are living their life as roof coverings.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Like, it's such a striking colour as well. And I love that there's no pigment in it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. It was a difficult one to plaster with because I didn't crush it, then take it out and sort of sieve it or anything. Right. I literally put buckets of broken tiles in the mixer.
Right.
With the clay and with the straw. And so you've got bits of grit that are kind of like 4 mil. And then there's loads of dust. But because you've got all that straw in there, it kind of holds it all together. But it was pretty tricky. Luckily, I wanted the float finish because I don't think you'd have got any other finish. But yeah, that's what makes the colour come out.
Properly beautiful. And between all the... are they the original rafters?
I think it may have had a new roof at some point in its life because the building itself is about 300 years old.
Right.
And I think sometime, maybe Victorian period, it's had a new roof. Although they're just quarter round timbers.
Yeah.
But the reason I think that is because they are some sort of pine, some sort of softwood.
Mm.
And all the really old bits of wood are all oak or elm.
Yeah.
And everywhere you see where there's been a repair, it's been repaired with some sort of softwood. I mean, it's a 100-year-old repair, but it's still a repair.
Yeah.
So that's why I think that... So it could be original, but I got a suspicion it might have been repaired at some point. But I could be wrong, because all the rafters are actually all the same. There's not like the odd oak one that's survived and then...
Mm. Yeah, you'd expect to see some that didn't perish.
Yeah,
unless it was like a catastrophic fire, but then it's a timber-framed building.
Yeah, it would have taken
the whole thing down.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose in the walls where the studs in the walls, they were oak studs, and then they repaired. You could see some softwood ones have been put in as repairs, unless they just used them both in the beginning because this was a saw pit,
right?
So it was just a. Like a working building. So
it's always been just a sort of agricultural... do you call it agricultural? No.
No, sort of light industrial, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, it was a saw pit. A friend, Steve, Fionn's partner, when they were down, he found an article in the Bucks Free Press, because, you know, he's all history and all that, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah, he's a building historian as well as all the other stuff he does.
Okay.
Whether he does that professionally.
Gypsum specialist.
Yeah. Yeah, he does all the ornate stuff.
Mm.
Anyway, he found this article from the Bucks Free Press from 1905 when it was closing down as a saw pit.
Right.
And so it was a village wheelwright's saw pit, and it had all the stuff he was selling. It was something King's wheelwrights, and it was like four planks of cherry, three chisels, four planks of oak. Like, it listed all his stuff he was selling. And so, yeah, there was a big pit. There was a big pit under here, which we found, which I found when I dug the floor up. And I found, like, the imprint of the timber in the clay. That timber had disappeared, but you could see the imprint of the timber in the clay.
Yeah.
I found loads of saw dogs, the big staples.
Yep, yeah. Log dogs.
Log dogs, that's it. Log dogs. What else did we find? Other bits and bobs. And a coin from 1750, I think it was.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then at the bottom, like 6 foot down, there was a layer of like gravel and just jet black, where it was obviously all the sawdust had rotted.
Oh, like fine compost.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was just a working building. So, you know, they may have built it with a hodgepodge of things. You never know.
Yeah.
I wanted to keep the pit. I wanted to put the pit as like a basement, but you wouldn't have been able to stand up in it. And the cost of doing that for what you'd have got would have been negligible.
So what did you do? Just fill it in?
Yeah, I dug all the loose stuff out because it had a concrete floor in it that was sloping into the middle and cracking. So I took the concrete floor out, and then I dug all the loose stuff, which was just like, what was it? So, you know, you expect to find bricks, don't you? Like builder's rubble. But obviously they filled it in. They must have filled it in like 100 years ago. And so it was just like clay, sandy stuff. Because obviously even back then they wouldn't have been throwing away half bricks, would they?
Right.
So it's quite interesting trying to think how, because I think, why is it all sandy clay stuff? Like, where's all the builder's rubble, the bricks? And the and so I took the loose stuff out. I got down to some quite compact stuff, which was about 2 foot above the bottom where the black.
Yeah.
And I left that there because it was all compact. And I only dug right down in certain places just to find out where the bottom was and what exactly it was.
Yeah.
Just to confirm it was a saw pit. And then I just backfilled it with hardcore, whacked it down.
Some old bricks chucked in?
No, it was all from around the corner. What do they call it? Type 1, crushed limestone.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
So
Americans call that road base.
Road base, yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah.
And always, that's when I'm talking to someone about an earth floor and we're talking about doing a subfloor out of that. I can't remember the word MOT or type 1. I just remember road base, and I'm going, it's road base. And then all these English builders look at me going like,
what?
Yeah. What are you talking about?
But people call it, round here, you either call it type 1, which is MOT type 1, which is Ministry of Transport type 1, because they use it for the roads. Or they call it, some people call it crush, because it's crushed limestone, and some people call it scalpings.
Yeah.
So it's quite when you go to the place, can I have some MOT type 1? They're like, what, crush? And like, yeah, scalping. So, all right. So you've got to call it like four names before you get there. But yeah, we just filled it with that and whacked it down. But what the neighbour over the road, their house was the wheelwright's house.
Right.
And this was the barn, the saw pit.
So this had originally belonged to them?
Yeah. And that house is even older than the barn. The barn age is an estimation based on the age of that house, which is 1650 something, I think, and the fact that we found that coin.
Yeah.
Because it may have been an open saw pit without a roof for a while.
Mm.
But she gave the lady who used to live there gave me this little book about the village wheelwright.
Right.
And so each village would have the wheelwrights, and they would have two saw pits, an outside one, which apparently was over there for big logs.
Yeah.
And a smaller one for doing all the spindles and bits like that, because they would repair all the wheels. They'd make
this
wheels.
This is sort of cart wheel.
Yeah, all horse and cart, horse and carriage. But they would, it talked about the sawmen or sawyers who would go from village to village cutting the wood up. Because, of course, they didn't saw the wood and take it all over the place.
Yeah.
The wood would be local, and then the people who cut the wood would go from place to place cutting it.
That's interesting.
So I was like, oh, of course. You wouldn't be moving big logs back then. You'd just use a tree that fell down. And
yeah.
The people who did the cutting would travel from village to village.
I wonder how big a sort of an area they'd move in. I suppose it must be fairly localised.
But depends how good they are, I suppose.
Yes. I know that the surname Sawyer is Obviously, that's from their craft. What do you call that?
The big arm.
The job.
Yeah, the job. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd ever. No, I've certainly forgotten that that was a wheelwright's name or a. Well, hang on, just the sort.
So the people who went from village to village were called the sawyers.
Are they just people that saw?
They just saw. You got the top dog and the underdog, haven't you?
Yeah.
Top
dog didn't get sawdust in their eye.
No, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's the underdog was down in the pit. And yeah, they're the ones who travelled from village to village. So, but the wheelwright had to have his saw pit so they could actually come and saw the logs up in the saw pit.
I see.
A bit like taking a mobile sawmill around, I suppose, isn't it? Nowadays.
What, just
no, maybe it's not.
Point at your arms. this is my wood miser.
You're looking at wood and miser. Yeah. But it's just when you work on the old buildings, it's just really interesting thinking like that. I didn't know of the surname Sawyer. I certainly didn't know of it as a as saw people who used to saw wood up.
Yeah.
But what a job that'd have been.
I was talking about this the other day to someone, but have you seen Dick Prenicky's One Man's Wilderness?
Mm-mm.
He went to Alaska and built himself a log cabin.
No.
And he sort of filmed himself doing it. And he was one of those people that makes like meticulous notes. It's like, it was -5 today. The depth of ice on the lake was 16 inches, all this kind of stuff. And he's like, I got a log and I sawed sort of 10 planks today. And you're just like, what? How on earth? And he's like, yeah, cut and peeled 20 logs today. And you're just like, damn, son.
So he cut 10 logs by himself?
He's just, just hand.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. Just ripping boards down.
I was thinking about that when I was. These boards were all wainy edged on the floor.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was just using the track saw to cut the wainy edge off. Mm. And I was thinking about it then. I was thinking, this must have taken so long.
And what a skillful job.
Yeah.
To cut so dead straight.
Yeah.
Has there been any other sort of interesting history things you found in here? Have you got any witches' marks? I guess it's not a house.
What are witches' marks?
They are, like, you know, if you get a compass and you draw a circle and then you put the compass on one point in the circle and you can do like a, I think they call it the tree of life as well.
Right.
It's like the sort of pattern you can make. There's some discussion about whether they were meant to ward off witches, like people were afraid of witches. Or
if they were the witches doing them.
If they were the witches doing them.
Whoa. No, I wouldn't like to find that.
No, I think they're actually, I think you mostly find them in like churches and homes. But they're normally like tucked up somewhere in the rafters or something.
No, I found little marks, you know, where they're marking the joints and stuff.
Yes.
But no witches' marks. I haven't seen a ghost yet. Which is, I'm a bit disappointed about, to be honest. I mean, things that were interesting were like, oh, so the bricks that are on the plinth,
mm-hmm.
which we can't see because they're behind the damp-proof course, they're put together with a lime-stabilised earth mortar.
Right.
Which was quite interesting looking at that and the big chunks of unslaked lime that were still in it. And, and then doing the digging... around the building, you find the same earth. It looks just like the mortar.
Yeah.
But then also the realisation that the bricks, the wood-fired bricks, because you see the smoky glaze on the end, would have been made here, and they're probably the clay from the pit.
Oh, wow.
And then on some of the bricks are found cat footprints, and one of the bricks had a deer footprint.
No way.
Yeah, so they'd obviously... I mean, what would probably have happened if they dug them out, they've made the bricks, they've stacked them outside close by, and they've made it like a loose kiln and lit a fire and burnt them all. And obviously, while they're drying, a cat has walked over the bricks.
Yeah.
And a deer's walked over the bricks. And so you've got this footprint from however old.
That's great.
So that, I mean, I quite like thinking about things like that.
Mm.
Again, a realisation of how things were built and were made.
And so... You reckon they'd have been firing bricks that locally?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. So doesn't it go that, like, when you get to sort of like 300 years old, the bricks, that there's so many different sizes because the brickmaker had their own moulds and right, they would go from place to place making the bricks on site.
Yeah. This is completely challenging my understanding of...
Yeah, because you couldn't shed loads of bricks.
No, of course
you can. It's way easier to, you know, you're digging the clay from a pond or from a pit or from a cesspit or something. And round here, it's all just really nice clay.
Yeah, we've got a lot of brickwork. Well, used to have a lot of brickworks around here.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of, there's roads around here called like Kiln Lane and Tile Lane. There's lots of roof tiles. And there's even next door, they didn't get planning for a stables or something like that because there was I want to say Neolithic, but that's probably way the wrong word. A really old tile kiln found under the ground, like where you know it's a tile kiln because there's a circle of clay with a burnt bit in the middle.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. There's a tile. There's a kiln. What? Where? That little mark on the floor there. So yeah. So the clay's really good. But yeah, I think that's what happened. They would go around with their own molds and make them in where they dug the stuff.
Nice. I mean, it's brilliant, and it should be how we're building now, ideally.
Yeah, I don't know if they'd let you have a fire. I mean, I'd love to burn some stuff. Not stuff, I mean, make some bricks.
Just some old plastic I've got.
But the thing, so H.G. Matthews, the brickmakers
just up here, the road, yeah.
They are doing something along those lines, sort of, which these little cob blocks... or bricks. These were left over from one of my jobs in sort of Oxfordshire way, where we dug, the house was like half on, not underground, but dug into the slope, and I think 80 tons of clay came out, really lovely clay.
Yeah.
And it went to H.G. Matthews, who made it into like 35 or 40,000 of these little bricks.
Right.
Which have gone into, they've done the floor in that house, the internal walls. Then we crushed some and sieved it to make clay powder to make the plaster for the house.
And so they're all unfired?
Yeah, all completely unfired. They're just clay and straw in the ratio of about, I think there's something like 3 clay, 2 straw by volume.
Yeah.
And these are just like two or three pallets that I've built the staircases out of and a few internal walls that were left over from that job. So I think they've got like 2 or 3 pallets left there that I've got my eye on for here. But that, so H.G. Matthews have just had installed a massive, they call it a wet pan, but it's like my roller pan mixer, except you can walk around in it and you'd have to go up a staircase to get in it.
Wow.
It's huge. And I think something like one of the rollers is like 750 kilograms and the other is like 500 kilograms. But they put it in because they're obviously making cob blocks from their own waste clay, but everybody's wanting to use their own site clay. So they put this mixer thing in so that they could take spoil from building sites, and it doesn't matter if it's got bits of concrete in, this thing will just crush it and it won't damage their existing
machinery. Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah. So you can go... I think they reckon it works within a 60-mile radius, I think they were saying, in terms of cost-wise.
Yeah.
But certainly, if the client for these had had to get rid of 80 tonnes of spoil, you know, once he'd worked out, I think he did a... So he worked out how much that would have cost, then he worked out how much it would cost, got a price from H.G. Matthews to make these, and it was way cheaper, and he's built all his, you know, internal stuff with it.
Brilliant.
And so now they're doing it as like as one of their regular services because so many people wanted to use their own clay.
That's brilliant. That's really, really great. Yeah, I was down in Lewis yesterday and have you heard of the Phoenix development? It's like, it's the industrial estate that kind of got their warehouse on.
Oh, right.
And they're trying to develop it and they're going to have loads of, like, 5 different architects doing sort of neighbourhoods within it. I think Material Cultures are one of the architects.
I think, I think I've...
But they've set, like, a really small radius in terms of where all the materials can come from.
Nice.
So to have a service like that where you can just especially if you're digging into a bank or something.
Yeah.
You know, and it'd be cost effective.
And it's so cost effective.
And they're really getting loads of brilliant building material.
Yeah. And they're really great like to plaster onto because they're obviously really dry.
Mm.
But you clay plaster onto that and it's dry in a day or two. Whereas normally you're plastering onto something not so absorbent and it takes forever. So they're good in that sense. And I've done floors with them.
Nice.
So you lay them in the floor and oil them. And they're really, really solid because they're just, there's no aggregate. It's all clay.
Yeah.
So the oil goes in, polymerizes, it makes it really hard. The first one I did was by accident where we laid Strox on a floor and we were going to do a clay floor over the top a la Jeffrey Hart. But when the client saw the Strox laid on the floor, he really liked them. He said, oh, I really like that. Let's just keep it like that. So I was like, all right, fine. So we oiled it. Loads of linseed oil, and then he beeswaxed it with his own beeswax from his bees. Not his own bees, his beeswax. And I put all my weight on the chair, like standing up, holding the chair, put my weight on it and scratched the chair backwards and forwards, and it didn't make a mark. It's absolutely rock solid.
Nice.
But of course, you wouldn't be able to do that laying the floor, like plastering on the floor, because it would shrink too much.
Mm.
But the blocks are like pre-shrunk. Nuggets of clay, aren't they?
Yeah.
So yeah, I love them. It's actually a realisation doing this building that blockwork and brickwork is really nice. It's like the hempcrete, the floor is hempcrete blocks and the walls all have a skin of hempcrete blocks on the inside.
Yeah.
And some of the internal walls are hempcrete blocks. And you can, if you use putty mortar in a bucket, it's pre-mixed, you take the lid off, you can come out after dinner, lay 10 blocks, put the lid back on, walk inside.
Nice.
Whereas normally you're doing hempcrete, if you're casting, you've got a crew of people, you've got to get it all done, it's wet, it's mucky. Or if you're spraying, it's like you've got to plan your breaks because the spray machine can only be off, for, like stop for half an hour, and you've got to clean this and clean that and make sure the hoses aren't getting blocked. And blocks, you can just sort of put your music on, take a trowel outside, bring a cup of tea, lay 10, go inside. It's like, it's really nice.
DIY's dream.
Yeah. You think you have to be really good at bricklaying, but I'm not a very good bricklayer. It's not something I do. I don't do it I build for a living, but I don't normally bricklay.
Yeah.
But these, because they're clay or the hemp ones are hemp, you build the wall, you want to get it plumb, but if there's the odd corner of a brick or a block sticking out or a lump or a bump, you just get the nail float.
Right.
And you can see where I've gone over the walls and there's scratch marks.
Yeah.
And then it all scratches it back flat fairly easily. And it looks like you're a really, really good block layer. But I'm not really good, but it all looks really nice and smooth.
They're beautiful.
You're going to plaster it, so it doesn't really matter if you get the courses level.
Yeah.
As long as your wall's plumb, you're all right. So it's actually, I never used to pay much attention to bricklaying and block laying, but it's a really nice thing to do.
It's quite systematic, isn't it?
Yeah. And you have very few tools.
Yeah.
Which is great. Yeah, I love it. And the mortar, like for the hemp blocks, it's all just stuff left over from jobs.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really matter what lime you're using. They all work. And it doesn't even matter if you've got like a really hydraulic lime because the wall's still breathable anyway because it's just these mortar lines.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit, you kind of don't want it because the blocks are quite vapor permeable. I guess you don't really want a very hydraulic mortar because you'll see lines in the plaster at the end of it. But like that, like the pink stuff there is left over from the Tadalac course,
right,
that I did like last year with when Siggy Coker came over. So that's pretty much Tadalac, that mortar,
right?
But that's, and then the stuff above is some leftover render from another job. And so in the same wall, you've got really coarse render and really fine Tadalac mortar, and they both work. It's even if you've got really fine mortar, because you're banging one block on top of another, even if it cracks a bit, it doesn't really, it's not structural, it doesn't really matter.
Mm. So it's all infill. So external walls is it hempcrete block all the way to the outside?
No, it is. So there's the main frame, post and beam frame, which is like a big chunky oak frame. And there's a post every, what's that, 10 foot, 3 metres?
Yeah.
But in between them, there's studs, and they're just modern studs, because all the old ones were rotted out.
Yeah.
Like completely. The outside of this building was banked up with earth when I bought it. So only the big ones have survived in the walls. So you've got, on the inside, you've got 80 mil of hempcrete block, and then you've got the studs, and the studs are full of wood fibre insulation. And then outside of the studs is a whole skin of wood fibre board, the tongue and groove wood fibre board. Oh,
that is snug.
Oh, man, it's so warm in here. If you look at that little radiator behind you, mm-hmm. that's the only, you can get this place absolutely toasty with that tiny one little radiator.
I bet, actually.
And it doesn't, the surprising thing is, that's just temporary. And the surprising thing is, it doesn't feel hot just by that radiator. Like,
you, as in it, like the,
it heats the whole place quite evenly.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is toasty. But I've got wood fibre between the studs, the board as well.
Yeah.
Because I, for some reason, ordered twice as much as I needed. Which is, it's like, I don't normally get things like that wrong. So I just cut it and put it between the studs as well. But it was meant to be hempcrete between the studs. But
oh, right. Oh, so you didn't use like a squidgy wood fibre.
No, I was going to use hempcrete, and I would normally in that position use Steico Flex or something.
Yes.
Or
a
hemp one. But I don't know how I did it. I probably wasn't paying attention. I bought twice as much wood fibre as I needed. But actually, it was really easy to stick it through a table saw and fit it between the things. And then the stuff you get out the table saw,
mm-hmm.
put in a bulk bag. I put a bulk bag to the thing, the outlet of the where the sawdust would normally go, and you've got loads of lovely fibre. And so you can use that in plaster, or you can fill little tiny holes around the place with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a great realisation.
You telling me that whenever that was years ago has changed my earth floors. Like, I now sit there with a garden vac.
Yeah.
One of the ones that mulches and just feed in bits of insulation left over from my house.
Yeah.
And then that's the fibre in my floors.
Yeah, it's great. It's really strong and really fine.
And it's nicely graded. Like, there's some really microfine things up to sort of straw-like bits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I put when I was putting it between the timbers, I was cutting off the tongue and the groove.
Mm-hmm.
So I had loads of little long bits. So I went to that secondhand tool shop we were just talking about.
Work Aid. Yeah, tell us what the name of it.
Work Aid in Chesham.
Yes.
Make sure you look if it's open before you go.
Yeah. Not tomorrow, damn you.
And I bought a garden shredder.
Yeah.
And you can just feed it into a garden shredder as well.
Nice.
Or if you've got bigger offcuts, you can just run them through a table saw. Or if you're like Tom and you've got a great big planer thicknesser, you just shove it through a planer thicknesser. But you can actually buy it as fibre if you haven't got offcuts.
Yeah, I haven't actually tested that yet, because they do a blow-in version, don't they? But I think there is, because it's loose, I think it's coated in borate or something like that to stop it being flammable. And I haven't got round to testing whether that makes an effect, like if it leaches through or something like that.
I thought the wood fibre didn't have borate and the cellulose did.
Oh, maybe.
Because I know if you use the cellulose as a fibre in clay plaster and you've got like the sun on it, so it's drying out to the room rather than into the background, you get salt on the surface, which I assume is the borate.
Yeah.
But I don't think the wood fibre has that.
Okay.
Because I've done it in loads of plaster. I've never had that with them. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's something else in there that stops the fire.
Yeah. Just blowing in loose wood fibre seems, without any kind of treatment, seems questionable. I don't know.
What, you mean the
as in...
Oh, like, yeah, it must have something.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you can't... Where did I buy that from? It was either Celtic Sustainables or it was something Ecosystems. I forget the name of it. There was one place you could buy it and it was like £19 a bale.
Yeah.
Or a bag, like the bale size bag. And you could, I mean, it just lasts you for ages if you're putting that in, because it's all compressed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you get a lot of fibre from one sheet of insulation.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got bulk, I had bulk bags of it outside for so long. In the end, I had to get rid of some. But that's the other thing with this kind of materials. I haven't used a skip here.
Right.
at all, because obviously things like the hemp blocks, the clay blocks and the hemp blocks, you put in the roller pan, crush it up, and it goes in the mortar, and then you've got the wood fibre that you can then make more insulation from, and then anything that you do want to throw away, it goes on the compost heap.
Yeah.
So
Will's circular system.
Yeah. The only thing you end up throwing away is packaging.
Yeah.
Just loads and loads of packaging.
I've just talked about this in another podcast, but my house, like half of the waste, because I gathered it all up, half of the waste bags were just the plastic that the insulation came in.
What did you do with it?
Went to the recycling centre.
Yeah. Not a lot you can do, is there?
No.
There was a book, what's it called? Oh, is that sustainability guy from back in the day? Something Seymour?
Philip? No, that's Philip Seymour Hoffman. John Seymour.
Is it? I think so. Sustainable. It's a sort of small holding?
Yes. Yeah.
So he collects his bags and makes chicken hutches. So they waterproof his chicken hutches. I thought it was quite clever.
Yeah. It was one of my biggest irks, actually, building that house.
Yeah.
It's
packaging.
Yeah. And then you buy a fridge and it comes wrapped in all the polystyrene.
Yeah. How does that translate to a podcast? That
yeah. So
for Jeffrey just held his fist up and went.
There you go. Thanks. Yeah.
So that's the wall build up, and then obviously outside of that, I've got the cladding.
Yeah.
Vented gap and cladding, and the cladding is a larch from Cheney's
nice
estate, which is like 4 miles away.
Brilliant.
And the floor is, I think, 250 mil of glay pour.
Nice.
The recycled foam glass.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got these hempcrete blocks, which are 80 mil. They're laid on lime mortar straight on the foam glass, which has been compacted.
Yeah.
And then I got these little bits of wood that are the same depth as the hempcrete block.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also just in between the hempcrete blocks for like, they look like train tracks, I suppose. They're just to screw the wood floor down to, because I knew I was going to have a wooden floor.
Yeah.
So if you were going to have like stone or tile or clay floor, you wouldn't have needed the wood in there.
Yeah.
And the wood floor is cedar, and that was from Great Westwood Estate down the road.
I don't know if I know where Great Westwood is.
It's like towards the motorway. You go past Chipperfield.
Oh, right.
There's a great big estate on the other private estate on the other side. And there's a guy around the corner, Greg, who's got a massive ancient sawmill.
Right.
And he, like when big trees fall down, people just give them to him because he's the only person who can cut them up.
Yeah.
And he just turned up one day as he was driving past and said, I've got this cedar tree. Do you fancy it? And he was thinking about the cladding, and I was like, yeah. And so, yeah, so it's like from around the corner. So I had it on he cut it into those inch planks, and I had it on the decking by the house for 2 years seasoning, and then it's been in here 2 years. I've been doing this a long time.
Yeah. Well, you know, six blocks at a time after dinner.
Yeah, after dinner, yeah. So, but it's Matt, look at the size of those boards.
They're like beautiful.
450 mil, some of them.
And you haven't seen any sort of shrinkage, or are you expecting much shrinkage?
Well, no, because they're like 4 year season now, 2 years outside and 2 years in here.
Mm.
And they had all bits of wood between them.
Yeah.
So I don't think, I hope they're going to be fine. But I just love the fact, so he drove past and offered me them, and the guy who does the larch, Justin Sticks and Steel, he was just driving past and stopped and was like, oh, what are you going to clad the barn with? And I was like, oh, probably larch. And he was like, oh, I cut larch in Cheney's. I had no idea he was there. I was just like, brilliant.
Nice.
Just wait for these people to drive past and offer me things.
Yes. What's next on the list of things to want?
If anyone wants to drive past and gives a kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put out into the world what you want to receive.
Yeah.
So you put in like two upstairs, what would you call it? Is that a mezzanine? Is it a floor?
I don't think it's a mezzanine, is it? It's like a hay loft at each end, isn't it? But you can stand up there, so it's like a proper bedroom.
Yeah.
It did used to have, where that truss goes across at wall plate level,
yeah,
there was a what I thought was a hay loft up there. But obviously you couldn't stand up on it because it's too high.
Mm.
So I've dropped that floor down. So you can stand up downstairs and you can stand up upstairs. But I later found out, it was Greg actually who came past and thought, said he was the first person who said he said he thought always thought it'd be a saw, this was a sawmill.
Right.
And the little window at the end by the road, which I thought was like the hay loft hatched kind of thing, was where they'd cut the planks down here, take them out the door in that end, and they'd pass them through and they'd sit them in these rectangular trusses.
Oh, right. Because
I don't know if you've seen them. I've never seen one that shape before.
Well, I did think it was an unusual feature, but...
But you can see that's perfect to put all the planks so they'd keep them up there to dry.
Yeah. It almost looks like a Japanese wind brace.
Yeah?
Hmm. Which is a thing, weirdly, I've only ever seen in Oregon.
Have you been to Japan?
I have. Yeah, I didn't see it there either. Very good for sort of racking strength.
Oh.
It's supposed to be.
Oh, anyway. So that's why it's called a Japanese wind brace.
Mm.
Oh. Yeah, I always thought it was a bit of an odd shape.
Yeah.
And in the little book I had that the neighbour gave me about the wheelwrights, it talks about this truss and putting the timber up there to dry it.
Yeah, yeah. It makes total sense when you've...
And obviously it's way too small to be a hayloft, like to be a hay barn. Because somebody said they thought it might be a threshing barn with... Where the wind, you have a door in the middle on each side, but it's way too small for that.
Yeah, that normally they're huge, aren't they?
Yeah. Plus, I found the saw pit, so kind of puts that to bed.
Nice. And then what's going on here? Jeffrey points at what would you call that? It looks like a sort of open fireplace, pizza oven type thing.
Under the stairs.
Yeah.
Well, basically, I made those... So the stairs sort of curl up.
Sort of spiral staircase style.
Style-ish. So it's three winders. So you go back on yourself and then up. And it was going to be under stairs cupboard.
Yeah.
Just for the hoover and the mop
and
that kind of thing. And then I made it kind of angled so it's wider at the top than the bottom, just... So it gives the impression of more space on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of nice. It's just a bit more interesting visually.
Yeah.
And those timbers were the old hayloft timbers, actually, that are on the corners.
It wasn't a hayloft.
It wasn't a hayloft. Yeah. what would you call it? A wood storage loft.
Yeah, timber loft.
Yeah. And so the bit that looks like a fireplace is the biggest amount of storage I could get under the stairs.
Right.
And then I thought, well, I can do two cubby holes above it for other stuff. And then I thought, well, actually, I can fit my massive speakers
in
that bit at the bottom. And then my amplifier fits nicely in that middle one. And then the top one for my audio player. And then there's actually a hole between them at the back so you can pass the wires through.
I'm looking at your speaker cabinet.
Exactly.
Your hi-fi
setup.
That's incredible.
Earth block speaker, hi-fi cabinet setup thing. And the speakers are they're up there. They're massive. My dad's old Robinsons.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think under there, it'll proper make the place boom. Yeah. The neighbours all know when I'm working it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was kind of just, storage. Oh, we could do a cubby hole. Oh, the amplifier would fit there.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not living here, but if it's not an amplifier, it will just be something else that sits there, and that'll end up a cupboard.
Yeah, I like it a lot. Well, you've sort of talked about the stairs just briefly there, but I think they're pretty unique.
Mm.
So they're the clay bricks again.
Yeah, so they are the clay bricks left over from that building site in Oxford, with clay mortar, just leftover plaster from jobs. The mortar is. And actually, they're basically solid. So you go up three steps, turning, then you turn three more steps. So you've actually turned a full 180 degrees back on yourself, and that is all solid. There's no gaps under there at all.
Wow!
And then you do like four steps, which is above the cupboard,
sort of supported by the cupboard.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the cupboard structure.
Yeah, and that's all bits of timber. That all the timber I pulled out of the walls that was rotten, I've used the bits that weren't so rotten for the internal walls and things. But I did it solid because I just thought with blocks, it's going to be difficult to do like an arch to have a like a cupboard underneath it. And then cupboards under like the first three steps or even four or five steps are useless anyway because you can't get down there.
Yeah.
And things just get lost back there. So I thought, well, I'll just do it solid. And there, it basically, the front, the bit that you see of the step is a nice, neat wall, but then everything behind that in the void is just rubbish.
Right.
It's like there's a load of old aircrete blocks that came out of this building that were in here lining the walls that are behind there. Any blocks, any waste I had are just in the fill bit.
Right.
Which is when I was building this house, I was doing a hempcrete extension in Long Crendon near Oxfordshire, and I came across this internal wall. We took the plaster off to replaster it, and it was basically a cage made of hazel or maybe sweet chestnut, slightly a bit thicker.
Yeah.
And the cage was just filled with rubble, like flint and rubble from building, from like building it 300, 400 years ago.
Yeah.
And then that was all plastered. And I was like, what a great way to get rid of your building waste is like...
It's like the original, what they call, gabions.
Yes. It's really similar. Yeah.
Huh.
So I just thought, well, I'll make obviously the first bit needs to be straight and square, and then the actual mass of it behind, under the other steps, it can just be anything,
yeah,
as long as it's solid.
Did you mortar all of that?
Yeah, it's all, but it's like you chuck a load of mortar down, like an inch thick, bang a load of these blocks on, willy-nilly, fill all the gaps, so it's really quick and easy. It's not like I've done it really neatly.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, the external finish is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And those, like the clay bricks, presumably you've been walking up and down these stairs. Like they're not, they don't look like they've really deteriorated at all.
No, they're really, these ones are, the clay is actually the stuff they used to make Whitchurch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's from that area. So it's chalky clay. It's really strong.
That's sort of renowned for being super tough clay.
Yeah, you put that, you see that clay in its raw form, and it looks like stone. It looks like limestone.
Yeah.
No, they are really strong, and that staircase especially is even that one's a lot older because I built that ages ago, and that has had. I've already had guests stay in here. Well, not guests, people who come to work.
Slaves.
Yeah. Similar. If I'd done it neatly, or no, I have done it neatly, but if I'd wanted to, I could have just oiled them and they would have been a staircase. But I delved into the staircase rules when I built these, obviously, and because this is all having to be under building regs. And you have to have a nosing, like a 16 mil nosing.
Like an overlap.
Yeah, so it sticks out the corner of the step where you're stepping.
Yeah.
And so that'd be really difficult in clay.
I mean, really fragile.
Yeah. I mean, I think you could angle the whole step back 16 mil and it gives you a bigger tread.
Mm-hmm.
But that has just been a pain.
So could you have just overhung the top brick?
Or just could have overhung the top brick by 16 mil.
It's a chunky old nose though.
Yeah. And because I've got all this cedar, I just thought I'll use a wooden tread.
Yeah. That'd be really nice.
But I could just linseed oil the... What do you call that? The riser.
Yeah.
But I'm probably going to plaster it in so it looks like it's one plastered wall.
That's going to be lush.
I'm going to leave. Andy was here the other day.
Pennell.
And he was saying, you've got to leave some truth windows. I was getting a bit excited about truth windows then, where I could put little truth windows.
There's truth everywhere.
Yeah. I thought I might do one in the wall, in an outside wall, like you take a whole plug out and you see the whole depth of the wall. So it's not just a window, it's like a whole, I don't know.
Tunnel of truth.
Tunnel, yeah, something like that. The blocks are, the little bricks are really strong. I've done a few floors with them, and when you oil them, they're just rock solid. And they look lovely. And you can sand them to bring all the straw and the... this one's just, you don't see anything but straw and clay, but the ones of H.G. Matthews' own clay, it gets little bits of flint in.
Yeah.
So you see the little bits of flint.
Yeah. Real nice.
Yeah. And obviously, the other reason behind it being solid, like a solid staircase for the first, what's that, six steps, is it's just a huge amount of thermal mass.
Yeah.
Right in the sort of, well, towards the centre of the building. But the other cupboard, that twin, because they're twin staircases, the other cupboard there looks similar with a cubbyhole.
Mm-hmm.
But if you won't get this on there's a pipe in there.
Right.
And you stick your head in there, and I'm going to go over this other side of the room. Stick your head in the other pipe.
Yeah.
Yeah, describe that one.
It was like a creepy little voice talking to me down the pipe. Why are they connected? Why is that pipe connected
to the cupboard? The cupboard's going to be like a larder.
Right.
And that's right by the kitchen.
Yeah.
And obviously it's under the stairs, which are solid clay, essentially.
So it's going to be the coolest spot.
Going to be cool. And then the pipe, which comes from the other side of the building, it will go, so that pipe which is sticking up will eventually go outside.
Right.
And it goes down under all the insulation into that pit, into the saw pit, the old saw pit, wiggles around a lot, and then comes up in the larder. And there'll be a little fan, tiny little fan like they use for the compost toilets, just on all the time, which will just be drawing up air. So I'm hoping, the idea is...
natural fridge.
Yeah, so it'll get to somewhere between 10 and 13 degrees, I hope, if the pipe's long enough under there.
Yeah.
And so in the winter, you're drawing up warmer air than is outside because it gets warmed.
Mm-hmm.
And in the summer, you're drawing up cooler air than is outside. And so it's keeping that cupboard at like 10, 13 degrees.
Yes.
Maybe a little bit warmer.
What's ground temperature?
It's supposed to be like, isn't it 3 metres down? It's like 13 to 16 degrees or something like that.
You have to get that deep.
Yeah, so I'm not quite that deep, which is why I think it would be slightly warmer. But
Yeah.
It will still be a nice temperature for a larder.
Yeah.
And then the air will then come out of the larder into the building, but it'll be fresh air at a sort of, let's call it 10 degree, well, 10 to 30, no, what are we saying? Yeah, so it'd probably be a little bit cooler, so like 10 to 13 degrees.
Nice.
Which is better than bringing in like freezing cold air in the winter, and it's better than bringing in boiling hot air in the summer.
Definitely.
And you can do a creepy whisper down it.
Yeah, your Airbnb guests.
It's so funny when the kids come over with their friends, they're like, put your head in the cupboard, put your head down. And I go to the other side of the room and whisper down it, like,
I'm gonna eat you. Will's Halloween house.
Yeah. I've always wanted to do something like that. I didn't have time to do something like that with a house. And I met a guy when I was on holiday once from California who had been in a house in California on the side of a hill where they had one of these pipes.
Mm.
Like, he had a really long driveway and it was under his drive all the way into the house and cooled his whole house.
It's basically a ground source heat pump, isn't it?
Well, there's a name for it, isn't there?
There is
a name for them. Something ventilation. It's not a heat pump because you're not compressing the heat or anything. It's just a cool...
It's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the other cupboard. That hasn't got a cubby hole above it, has it? No, it's just... But everybody, it looks like a fireplace, and everyone's like, why have you got a fireplace in the kitchen?
I suppose once you put a door on it, it'll look like a cupboard.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's really funny, when you talk to people of a certain age, older people, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Pam's mum, my wife's mum, my mother-in-law, I told her, she's like, oh, yeah. Like, we had those everywhere. And then you put a great big... I mean, they didn't have the venting pipe, but they're like, yeah, we had a larder on the cold side of the house with a vent to outside, and you'd put a big slab of marble in there, and the marble's really, really dense.
Yeah.
And so it stays really cool in there. And like, oh, yeah, we always had that. It's like, why did we stop doing that?
Oh, it's great. It's really great. Yeah. What's your bathroom setup?
Toilet sink.
Yeah? Classic.
It's... they've got a little tiny bath at the end because it's very small in there.
A little tiny bath?
There's a little bath at the end, yeah, 1,500 long.
You keep chatting.
Everybody's had a bath in that says how lovely it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
Yeah. Wait, run yourself a bath.
All right.
Back in a minute. I don't know why it's like a, it's a steel bath. I mean, it was just a cheap bath.
Yeah.
Like, but it's metal rather than acrylic. And I don't know why that makes it feel nicer in the, when you're in it. I don't know.
Mm.
But it's a lovely little bath.
Does it warm up? Like, takes the heat?
Where yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it just doesn't feel so plasticky.
Yeah.
But it wasn't anything special. It was just a cheap bath. And then I got the toilet and the sink from Facebook Marketplace. And the corner of the sink's got one of those little cutouts.
Yeah.
That's just the decoration of the sink. But it fits exactly around the little timber in the corner. Like, you couldn't have scribed it any better. So I was like, oh, that's good.
Meant to be.
And then there's a shower over the bath. But the quandary, which I think I've come to conclusion, I've concluded, is, you know, whether to do Tadalact and all that stuff,
yeah.
Fancy stuff. But I'm thinking, it's an Airbnb, and if I put loads of effort into some Tadalact and somebody ruins it, or like...
You'll leave them a stinky review.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think I'm just going to tile the walls, tile the floor, and then have got clay plaster on the ceiling and clay plaster on the walls where it's not behind the sink or anything.
Yeah.
I think, but I might make the tiles out of my, I've got like quite a few roof tiles left, which mm-hmm. weren't good enough to go on the roof, but weren't bad enough to crush.
Yeah.
So I thought I might cut them square because they're a beautiful reddy orange colour and then tile with them.
That'd be nice.
Then I'll be happy with that. But I'm not sure, and I might give Emma a ring about this because I think she might know. Emma Winfield?
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember she was talking to me about clay tiles once before.
I laid all those clay tiles for her.
In her flat?
Yeah.
Oh. So
The terracotta tiles.
That's it, yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering, because they're not smooth, I'm wondering if they're going to get, like, are they going to be, obviously you want to seal them
yeah.
with something, but are they going to go mouldy easier because they're not smooth?
Yeah. I mean, she sealed, I know she did loads of tests. I can't remember.
Brilliant.
What product. Yeah, I'm sure she recorded it all as well. In fact, I've got quite a lot of her old oil.
Oh yes.
She gave me a load of pigments and a load of oil, so I've probably got all the ones I could look and see.
Yeah.
the selection of oil she's tested.
Yeah.
I don't think they go mouldy though.
Well, I was just thinking, because when in a modern bathroom with shiny tiles, the grout goes mouldy.
That's true.
I assume because it's more textured, harder to clean. Then Andy pointed out the other night that in Airbnb you get it clean after everybody's been in here, so the mould's probably not going to get a chance. And I've got clay on the ceiling, so it'll be dealing with the moisture. So I should probably stop worrying.
Yeah, I wouldn't stress.
Yeah.
But, well, I mean, that's not going to stop you.
No, I still stress.
I know how these projects work.
But I'm going to, a lot of this is, a lot of stuff I've done is trial and error.
Mm.
It's
great. I mean, without ever sort of saying it, you've done a really good example of circularity, you know, circular economy, everything sort of coming from the roof, going in the walls, going in.
Helps you got a roller pan.
Yeah. So that's what I see. Like, in my toolkit for the sustainable village, roller pan mixer is, or just get you.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
the travelling roller pan man.
I suppose you could have a shy horse with really big shoes on.
Yeah.
Crushing stuff.
I'm just going to take a photo of you because you're sat exactly like the massive Grinch that's just behind you.
Look, I'm not angry, I've got a frown.
Can I get your frown on?
No, I can't frown. Yeah. Is it life size or is it like slightly smaller than life size?
I don't know how big a mythical character is.
Yeah, but it's like a human, it's like a 10-year-old child, size of a 10-year-old child.
I mean, it's almost exactly the same size as you, mate.
Is it?
Yeah, it goes to the same height.
And it looks very real, and it's solid. And I came in here one day, and the kids was like, oh, why don't you go in the barn? And I was like, all right. Because I love going in the barn, but normally they're like, why don't you come and play? And so I came in, and they'd sat it on the bath. And obviously the bath, when you've got the lights on, is that bathroom's quite, you can't really see. So I walk behind the curtain and I scream my head off. And it's got those big eyes just looking at me. They are all laughing, obviously laughing their heads off. was like, oh, great, yeah, nice bit of fun. And then the next day, I completely forgot the Grinch was in here, came back to the toilet, screamed my head off. And this carried on for like a week until I was like, finally remembered the Grinch was in here. And now he moves around. He moves around. He's been up with his head out the window up there. Nice. I just move around so people...
Where did he come from?
I have no idea. Honestly, Pam brought him back one day. He was sitting on the bath. They must have, I don't know, one of her friends has... I don't know. I haven't actually asked her where he came from.
Yeah, why spoil the illusion?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nice one, Will. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat me through your project and for dedicating yourself to doing that project so well. It really is beautiful. Will's put up some more pictures recently that I'll link to in the show notes. Such a stunning building. Speaking of links, I will put a link to Clayfest. Definitely to Clayfest. We mentioned James Henderson a few times. He's going to be at Clayfest. We mentioned Earth Floors a couple of times. I'm going to be at Clayfest. Teaching Earth Floors. There is also a link to that Dick Prenicky. There's a book and a film. I'll put links to those. He was the guy ripping boards down. I chat about him quite a lot. I'll probably stop talking about him soon. Link to HG Matthews, which is where Clayfest is being held. It all ties together. They make the compressed clay blocks. A link to the Phoenix Project. We've been talking about that a lot recently as well. Dyco, who make wood fiber boards. There's a link to WorkAid in Chesham, which if you're ever in Chesham, WorkAid is a fantastic secondhand tool shop, which all the money goes to helping out those less fortunate. There's a link to that John Seymour book. It's a really fantastic book. Obviously a link to That Hemp Creek Guy, that's Will's website, so you can check out Spraying Clay Hemp. Okay, that is going to be all for me. I'm heading off very early tomorrow morning to go and install an earth floor in London with none other than Jamie Ingle, friend of the podcast. If you like this podcast and want to support, please head to patreon.com/buildingsustainability. If you want to share it, that would help get the word out. And if this is your first episode, then do head back and check out the other episodes. Why not start with episodes 24 and 25 featuring William Stanix? Otherwise, episode 100 is a really good one. Lots of information about kickstarting your career in natural building. Okay, until next time, see ya.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits.
Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.